This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, January 7th, 2014. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Ahead on Ozarks, the new year brings an increased need for nurse practitioners in Arkansas, and 100 CEOs have given their opinions about what they think 2014 may have in store for businesses in Arkansas. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas has the results of that survey.
Plus, some of the first live music in 2014 will be inside. We have a preview of a new festival in Eureka Springs that can be attended in stocking feet.
But first, voters in Arkansas will have an opportunity to weigh in on efforts to raise the minimum wage in the state. Supporters of the Give Arkansas a Raise Now have received approval from the Arkansas Attorney General, Dustin McDaniel. The group's ballot measure proposes to raise the state's minimum wage to $8.50 over the span of 3 years. Stephen Copley is chair of the campaign. He says it's been 5 or 6 years since the last minimum wage increase, and many state residents are struggling to survive on the $6.25 they receive per hour.
It really is almost impossible at minimum wage to be able to work and make ends meet. So that's why, you know, in this current climate, it's important that we increase that minimum wage. The federal minimum wage is 7.25. And there is a small segment of 100,000-plus workers in Arkansas that still gets the state minimum wage.
Copley says after the recent recession, an increase in the minimum wage could ensure those who are working hard can share in the American dream and actually live on what they're being paid.
Boonville Community Hospital began the new year with a new name, Mercy Hospital Boonville. But Brent Hubbard, Chief Operating Officer of Mercy Hospital Fort Smith, which operates all of Mercy's critical care hospitals in the River Valley, says the transition is more than just a name change.
From a day-to-day functionality of the hospital, from a patient's viewpoint, it's relatively unchanged. I won't see many changes. We'll have some back office functions that will change over time and probably be more evident to our coworkers than it will be the patients. What we hope to do from a Mercy Ministry standpoint is to take services to the community that are not currently available.
Hubbard says with its inclusion in the Mercy Network, the Boonville Hospital will be one of 4 Mercy critical access facilities in the River Valley.
So they'll be a major component of expanding services in the region and providing specifically services for the community of Boonville that were not available before the transition to Mercy. So we're really excited about the potential and what the community will see in the future in the way of healthcare services provided in the community, and really hope that Boonville Hospital will be able to provide services that may have been sent to other communities in the past because the services weren't available there.
Hubbard says by gaining a presence in Boonville and other small communities, Mercy is positioning itself to increase access to healthcare services. In addition to Fort Smith and Boonville, Mercy operates critical access hospitals in Waldron, Ozark, and Paris.
The co-chairman of the state's legislature's Joint Performance Review Committee says he hopes a meeting today in Little Rock will provide transparency and open discussion. The matter at hand is finding out more details about what led to a multi-million dollar deficit in the University of Arkansas's fundraising division. Representative Terry Rice says he wants to see a fair and open meeting.
Very few times have I been where we couldn't have discussion before something's reviewed. And I don't know how you can really do it. It's not that we would change anything that the prosecutor found or didn't find, but it would have been an opportunity to have questions.
Some members of the audit committee defended not hearing testimony from the former employees by saying it's not the job of the audit committee to unveil wrongdoing, saying that was placed in the hands of the Washington County prosecutor, and the committee was only there to accept the state audit report that found the shortfall.
Fayetteville will soon be considered a city of compassion when Mayor Lionel Jordan this month formally endorses a charter of compassion from the International Compassion Action Network. The nonprofit Compassion Fayetteville spearheaded the effort for the Compassion Charter, which includes a 3-year action plan to help promote compassion within the city. Edwin Williams with Compassion Fayetteville says the action plan is currently in the development stages.
But it's going to consist of a variety of different activities around the city to promote compassion. And, you know, actually when one looks at what compassion is. We're on a daily basis a compassionate people. We do compassionate acts all the time. We're just not aware of it. And I think it's more of a process of becoming aware of how compassionate we are. And just, like I said, becoming aware of it and really document it so we can see how compassionate we actually are.
Fayetteville has previously been recognized for volunteerism in the city, and Williams says the move to make it a city of compassion meshes well with other similar movements in the city.
It's just a matter of, I think, getting organized and recognizing how many activities, how many organizations are in town are practicing compassion, and to realize that, you know, there isn't any real difference between one organization to the other. We're all trying to be more compassionate to one another.
With the Charter of Compassion, Fayetteville will join other compassionate cities such as Seattle, Washington, Cincinnati, Ohio, and Huntington Beach, California. In addition to being added to a growing list of compassionate cities, February will also be declared a month of compassion in Fayetteville, during which a number of events centered around the idea of compassion will be held.
President Obama has issued a disaster declaration for 13 Arkansas counties affected by the severe winter storm at the beginning of December. The declaration includes Crawford, Franklin, Johnson, Logan, Madison, Marion, Newton, Scott, Searcy, Polk, Sharp, and Van Buren counties. It means assistance will be available from the Federal Emergency Management Agency for certain affected state and local governments. The funding includes 75% of eligible costs for emergency protective measures, 75% of eligible costs for repairing or replacing roads, bridges, and other publicly owned buildings and facilities, and up to 75% of costs for hazard mitigation projects.
The Sebastian County Quorum Court and Fort Smith Board of Directors last night agreed on amenities to be included in the Ben Guerin Aquatic Park. According to the City Wire, the $10.9 million park will include a wave pool, three bodies of water, a 500-foot lazy river, two 40-foot and two 30-foot water slides, and a wave pool in more than 20,000 square feet. Now that amenities for the park are agreed upon, final design work will be completed over the next few months, followed by an updated feasibility study to correctly detail operating expenses, admission prices, and expected revenues based upon the new design.
Mostly clear tonight, lows around 20. 60% chance of freezing rain tomorrow afternoon with increasing clouds and a high of 35. Tomorrow night, cloudy, 60% chance of freezing rain, lows from 25 in northwest Arkansas to around 29 tomorrow night in the Arkansas River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large. On January 1st, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act took full effect. All Americans, including 2.1 million newly insured, will now have access to 10 essential health benefits and can no longer be denied medical coverage due to pre-existing conditions. And with a projected shortage of primary care physicians to serve them, new research indicates nurse practitioners may help fill the gap. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
Perhaps you've gone to the local clinic expecting to see a doctor, but instead were treated by a nurse practitioner. She assessed your vitals, listened to your complaint, and then prescribed some medicine, just like a physician. So what exactly is a nurse practitioner? Dr. Cindy Cook serves on the board of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners.
Nurse practitioners first originated in the 1960s. This was they were started by a nurse. Her name was Dr. Loretta Ford, and she saw a real need for patient providers and felt that nurses with extra training could meet those needs.
Nurse practitioners must first acquire their registered nursing degree, then continue on with advanced training.
To be able to evaluate, diagnose, and treat multiple acute and chronic illnesses.
Dr. Cindy Cook, who's obtained her Doctor of Nursing Practice, is a family nurse practitioner for the U.S. Army based in Huntsville, Alabama. According to a recent survey conducted by the American Association of Nurse Practitioners, 80% of respondents have experienced or know of someone who's seen a nurse practitioner.
Many nurse practitioners own their own practices and actually provide for a whole panel of patients. And, you know, to me, that's very beneficial. I am a family nurse practitioner, and I do things very similarly to the family physicians in that we do a wide variety, you know, I am responsible for a panel of patients, and those are my patients. And when I feel that they need, you know, more extensive care or more specialist care, then I refer on to that. But I can work them up myself and take care of acute and chronic problems for those patients, and I do that each and every day.
Experts have long been forecasting that the U.S. is experiencing a widespread shortage of primary care physicians, numbering into the tens of thousands over the next decade. And with millions more Americans obtaining private health insurance and Medicaid coverage under the Affordable Care Act, that shortage is expected to worsen. Last November, RAND Health, an independent health policy research program, reported that the shortage could be reduced by as much as 50% with new models of medical care that expand the role of physician assistants and nurse practitioners. Again, Cindy Cook.
There are always plenty of patients to go around, and so I think that if we use and utilize people's expertise to the highest level of their education and training, then we will do nothing but benefit the patients across the country.
And polling by the American Association of Nurse Practitioners reveal widespread public support for legislative and policy proposals giving patients access to nurse practitioner-centered care and services.
Well, what we have found is that Americans around the country trust NPs as vital, you know, as a vital source of health care and are actually the preferred providers by many patients.
The survey also found that more than 60% of Americans favor removal of requirements that NPs work under supervision of a physician.
Many states allow for full practice of NPs to work without supervision or collaboration of physicians, and patients have the choice of their provider on their own. And I think that, you know, if we can provide those choices to patients, then that's the key, and that they can see their provider of choice.
According to AANP, nurse practitioners increasingly referred to, including in Arkansas, as advanced practice registered nurses, is a rapidly growing field, up nearly 60% over the past decade, with more than 170,000 practicing nationwide, with an additional 14,000 NPs graduating this academic year.
We are everywhere.
Dr. Anna Jarrett is an acute care nurse practitioner and adult clinical nurse specialist who works at Renaissance Health and Wellness in Rogers. She's also an assistant professor of nursing at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, currently coordinating the college's new Doctor of Nursing Practice program. She says most acute care nurse practitioners work in cardiology, pulmonology, renal, midwifery, orthopedics, and as anesthetists.
There is a new role, and I did that part-time for 2 years. It's a hospitalist APN role. Very exciting role. You basically work with a hospitalist, admitting patients, doing the initial admission history and physical, writing their admitting orders, monitoring them, following them day to day.
Dr. Jarrett recently gathered data on the number of advanced practice registered nurses in Arkansas and found a 30% increase over 1 year.
And I looked at Fayetteville within 100 miles. There are 1,087 nurse practitioners. Now, that's the APRNs, the basket term. In Little Rock, within a 100-mile radius, there are 795. In Arkadelphia, there are 122. Jonesboro, 1,511. And Russellville, where I previously practiced as a hospitalist APN, in a 50-mile radius, there are 109. In Texarkana, 50-mile radius, there are 120. So I feel comfortably that we have about 3,000 nurse practitioners today. So that's a pretty good jump.
Jarrett says that Arkansas is progressive when it comes to physician oversight of nurse practitioners.
We do have collaborative practice agreements, and that is for nurse practitioners or for clinical nurse specialists that will be prescribing and have prescriptive authority. But in Arkansas, a collaborative practice agreement is required. And a couple of years ago, it became a little more stringent. Your collaborator, which is a physician, you must match with a physician. Okay, my current collaborator is an ER physician. But at this time, I think that the Arkansas is in a good position. I would like to see us lift the requirement for the collaborative practice agreement,
granting nurse practitioners complete autonomy. And the timing couldn't be better. According to a 2011 UAMS Center for Rural Health study, 4,212 Arkansas medical facilities surveyed report 282 primary care vacancies, with an additional 470 more expected. Medical clinics reported the highest number, and NPs are expected to help fill the gap. The Arkansas Nursing Board reportedly counts nearly 7,000 students enrolled in registered nursing programs. And Dr. Jarrett says of nurses graduating with associate's and baccalaureate degrees, many go on to become expert nurses in specific fields, with some taking advanced degrees. But becoming an advanced practice registered nurse requires extensive education.
It is required that you have a graduate degree. Currently, you can have a master's degree in nursing. Our national certifying body is very quickly moving toward a doctorate of nursing practice as the entry level for nurse practitioners, clinical nurse specialists, any advanced practice registered nurses.
The median salary for a general nurse practitioner can range from $50,000 to nearly $100,000, depending upon the market. But every market is now seeing increased demand under the Affordable Care Act. Between October 1st and December 24th, nearly 60,000 Arkansans have enrolled into Medicaid-funded private health insurance, with thousands more enrolling onto the federal health care marketplace. And according to the American Association of Colleges and Nursing, a current nursing shortage is expected to intensify under Obamacare. Again, Dr. Anna Jarrett.
Well, our nurses, not only is there a shortage, our age, 44, I believe, is the average this year for the age of nurses. More nurses, the most, 46%, are in their 50s working. Okay? So we have increased age and we have decreased faculty. So we can't really produce the number of RNs.
But noting a remarkable trend, Dr. Anna Jarrett says we may see within 5 years a surplus of nurse practitioners. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Business leaders around the state have their eyes on 2014. What do they see trending in the first half of the year? Talk Business Arkansas, in conjunction with the State Chamber of Commerce and consulting group CEG Partners, has asked 100 CEOs in Arkansas for their take on revenue and employment expectations, capital expenditures, and consumer confidence. CEG Partners Managing Partner Mike Stafford and Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas sat down recently to discuss these results.
Basically, we're lucky enough to survey all of the major industries here in the state, healthcare, pharmaceuticals, manufacturing, construction, finance. So, yeah, we've hit all the major.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
What were some of the big takeaways that you can kind of say just from the top lines? I mean, are we optimistic about 2014, pessimistic, or somewhere in between?
Yeah, it's a slightly optimistic view for the next 6 months or so. And, you know, that's what we've heard from all the economists that I'm sure you've talked to, that modest recovery is the theme that we see in a lot of the data.
Let's drill down in some of the full screen graphics that we have here and talk about, I think our first one that we've got queued up here is, how are overall economic conditions, how do they compare to about 6 months ago? And what we found from the survey data is that 25% see it being much or somewhat better than 6 months ago. Approximately 54% say it's about the same. Then we have 15% say it's somewhat worse. 6% much worse. Does that surprise you?
Not a whole lot. It was slightly positive looking back, a little bit more negative. But when you get to the future, they're a little bit more optimistic about the future, which is good news.
And let's look at what they say about the future here, too. We talk about how they see economic conditions changing in the next 6 months. 35% see it as being much or somewhat better, 37% about the same, 22% somewhat worse, 5% much worse. That's actually not bad when you look at the much worse is not that big.
And that's right, Roby. That 35% was more like 25% when looking backwards. So about a 10-point swing in the positive is what we're seeing for the future.
Are we just generally optimistic people, do you think?
Yeah, it could be. Could be. It's a new year.
Yeah. Was there anything that came from maybe any comments in the survey that gave you some insight on why they felt things might be moving?
Yeah, and we've dug a little deeper into some of the data, and it, you know, as an aggregate, as a whole, it's fairly positive. But if you break it out by industry, you see some different trends. So like manufacturing, you know, was fairly positive. Healthcare and pharmaceutical industry was not so positive.
We're going to get to that in just a second here, too. Okay. Let's look at what their expectations were in terms of revenue growth for the next 6 months. Again, some generally very positive news here. Our 100-plus CEOs see 64% that it will increase slightly or increase significantly, and most of that was in the increase slightly category there. Mm-hmm. 16% say no change in expected revenues for the next 6 months. 15% decrease slightly, and 5% decrease significantly. Our next slide actually indicates what you were talking about in the healthcare sector there, where we see only 24% see revenue increasing slightly, 0% increasing significantly, no change for 12%, 35% decrease slightly, 29% decrease significantly. That is a dramatic difference in that healthcare sector versus the overall numbers.
It is. When we look at everybody but healthcare, you see a fairly positive outlook. When you look at just healthcare, it's almost a flip-flop.
Obviously, the healthcare debate that's going on nationally for the last few years, there's just this pessimism from CEOs of hospitals and other medical organizations that they don't see that being a positive for them.
Absolutely, yeah. As far as revenues in their mind going forward, that part of the healthcare industry is a little under the weather.
All right, let's look at employee growth here. Again, just from our survey here, in the next 6 months, do you plan to increase employment, decrease employment, or no change? We see 40% see a slight or significant increase in employment, 35% no change whatsoever, 24% decrease slightly, 1%, only 1%, a big significant decline in employment for the next 6 months.
Yeah, and if you looked at that on a chart, you'd see a lot of middle of the road, kind of, you know, no change, maybe some change, maybe in the wrong direction. And so you've got that difference of revenue seems fairly positive, but I'm still concerned about my cost and controlling those costs.
And I think you could see this too. You could be a glass half full person or a glass half empty. You could
That's
say,
right.
Well, overwhelming majority are either going to not change or increase slightly, or half or more than half are going to decrease slightly or not make any change. Just depends on where your level of
optimism
is.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, it's there's still some unknowns, you know, and one of the comments that we received were that regulation and compliance is the fastest growing part of their business.
Not necessarily the biggest revenue generator.
That's not
for a
what
company.
You want. Yeah.
All right. Last question here. I think that we rolled through is expected capital expenditures. How much do you expect to spend in the next 6 months? 52% either slightly or significantly. Most of that in the slightly category. Mm-hmm. No change for 31%. 12% decrease slightly. 5% decrease significantly. Again, kind of back to your point that people are trying to control costs. They see revenue growth, mm-hmm. not as much employee growth relative to revenue, not as much CapEx growth mm-hmm. as a part of revenue. So they're going to make some more money, I guess, this next year with controlling their costs.
Yeah, one would expect to see some profits increase a little there, but yeah, they are a little more aggressive on the capital investment than they are on hiring more people. And we see that same trend in the national results that we've seen as well.
So pull all this together into the crystal ball and I guess just kind of summarize all this. And what should a business leader do with this information? I mean, what does it give them in terms of degree of confidence?
Well, I think as we do this again, we'll have some baseline to compare to. But it's, again, that modest recovery. I think the businesses are still going to continue to try to rein in on expenses and costs and watch, what the bottom line is.
Roby Brock talked to Mike Stafford, managing partner of CEG Partners, about a survey of 100 CEOs in Arkansas about their thoughts on 2014. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, encouraging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity, coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And Mitchell Williams Law, providing diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Mitchell Williams Law Firm employs nearly 80 attorneys at offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, Medicaid expansion isn't keeping people out of the emergency room, but it is succeeding on other measures, improving health and lowering medical bills. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Stay tuned to KUAF. Today's Here and Now can be heard next, beginning at 1 o'clock on 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
It's understandable if, given the holidays and the weather, you haven't been able to keep up with all the events that have been canceled, rescheduled, or postponed. One of the Christmas-themed events at Walton Arts Center that was affected by the weather is taking place, albeit without the holiday theme, this Sunday afternoon. Six-time Grammy winner Ronnie Millsap is scheduled to perform Sunday at 4, and the concert is expected to contain the country singer's biggest hits.
Meanwhile, another Walton Arts Center concert has been scratched because of circumstances beyond the venue's control. Chucho Valdez's performance on Friday, February 14th, has been canceled because of an accident in Japan. He'll undergo surgery with several months of recovery expected. Although currently stable, he's canceling the entire North American tour, including the Walton Arts Center performance. No plans to reschedule at this time. For more information, you can contact Walton Arts Center's box office at 443-5600.
Beginning now, you have more chances to walk into the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum, or RAM. Beginning today, the museum has extended its hours of operation to 6 days a week. Patrons can see the exhibits Tuesday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. and from 1 until 5 on Sunday afternoon. There is no admission charge. And keep this on your calendar. On January 16th, the new exhibit, Valentine's, The Art of Romance, opens at the RAM.
If the weather cooperates, this weekend we'll provide some soup, some ham, and a parade. The soup will be part of a fundraiser for a program at the St. Andrew's Episcopal Church in Rogers. The church sponsors, along with other churches, a program that feeds about 50 children a weekend at Elmwood Middle School. Saturday evening's fourth annual Soup Supper fundraiser will take place at the church's parish hall at 824 West Oak from 5 until 8 Saturday evening. Donations are requested and accepted, and you can eat at the church or just pick up some soup for eating at home. Last year, the fundraiser earned about $5,000, and every dime raised this year will benefit the program. For more information, you can call the church at 636-4042.
The ham on Saturday and Sunday is not food, but a chance to earn a ham radio operating license. The two-day class will be at North Arkansas Regional Medical Center in Harrison and is offered by the NARMC's Disaster Management Team. The class is from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. both Saturday and Sunday. The cost is $15 and includes the licensing exam processing fee. Space is limited, so for more information, call 870-414-5519.
Saturday, a nearly week-long schedule of events honoring the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. begins in Fort Smith. The opening event is a parade Saturday afternoon at 1 that will begin at the corner of Garrison and North 7th. The route will wind through downtown Fort Smith. The parade itself will include local bands. Sponsors of the 2014 events include the Fort Smith-based Martin Luther King Jr. Community Association and the University of Arkansas Fort Smith. Other activities this month include two prayer services, an evening banquet, a breakfast followed by educational presentations, and a march, an Unsung Hero Award announcement, a student-led panel discussion called Finding Your Voice in the Arts, and a dramatic presentation by the daughter of a legendary civil rights leader.
Speaking of Fort Smith, the city has been named as the fifth among the True West magazine's top western towns for 2014. The list is published in the magazine's February issue, which is scheduled to be on newsstands today. Dodge City, Kansas, was ranked first this year. The magazine takes note of Fort Smith's iconic figures like Bass Reeves, Judge Parker, and Miss Laura.
Finally, no area collegiate athletic event scheduled for this frigid Tuesday, though most area college basketball teams are back in action either on Wednesday or Thursday night. But to help you escape from the cold temperatures for just a bit, we'll mention that the University of Arkansas softball schedule for 2014 has been announced. Arkansas will begin the season the first week of February in Las Vegas for a tournament at UNLV. The first home games are February 13th through the 16th, part of the Arkansas Invitational. In all, the Razorbacks will have 29 home games at Bogle Park on the UA campus. This is Ozarks at Large. Given this week's single-digit temperatures, it comes as a relief that the first ever Ozark Mountain Music Festival in Eureka Springs later this month will be held entirely indoors. In fact, all of the shows during the last weekend of January will be inside the Basin Street Park Hotel. In the last days of 2013, I reached the architects of the new festival, Jack Moyer and Mary Howes, at the Basin Park, and asked them about the festival.
We always are looking to move Eureka more towards year-round so that people in Northwest Arkansas and Tulsa and Springfield can have that retreat and get away. And in doing so, Eureka traditionally has been an outdoor attraction. So we just decided that we needed to create new opportunities to let people enjoy Eureka year-round. So what we wanted to do is create sort of that outdoor music festival and just do it indoors. So we're really hoping that the Basin Park will turn itself almost wholly over to festival goers, and we'll have music throughout the whole property and fun. And, you know, it's an interesting concept. We'll see if it works.
Yeah, it's not just an indoor festival. It's in basically one place. I mean,
it is currently. And, you know, Eureka is pretty famous for its music events, and many of the great events started with the same origin in the Basin Park. So we're hoping that year one is successful. Year two will grow it, and, you know, when we hit year 55 or whatnot, whatever the folk festival is now, then we can look back and say, I remember year one.
The title of the festival is Ozark Mountain Music Festival. Did you come up with the title?
Yeah, we thought that was a good working title, and it stuck and became the name of the event. And internally, we call it Osmo Moo, just because that sounds sort of fun.
Osmo Moo, I like that. You know, that could catch on.
Yeah, you know, a few years down the road, when people know what an Osmo Moo is, that we may just call it that.
I'm just trying to picture what the mascot for Osmo Moo would look like.
Well, maybe we'll have a contest.
There you go. Eureka's great for contests as well as music.
There you
festivals.
Go. That's right.
Now, some of the bands will be in the Ozark Room. If I have my Basin Park geography correct, that's at the top, right?
No, we'll have bands in the Barefoot Ballroom.
That's at the top. The ballroom, right, yeah. Of course.
And then, of course, we have the rooftop billiards up there, and we're going to have musicians. We're really going to have all of our space available for jam sessions. We encourage people to bring their own instruments. We will have shows, but we're also going to just have pop-up music throughout, whether it's out on the balcony, fingers crossed that the music or that the weather's good. The Ozark Room is there on the first floor. We'll have regular music in the Ozark Room, and then our big shows will be upstairs in the Barefoot Ballroom with folks encouraged really to socialize with the acts and stick around for the midnight jam. And anybody who wants to come in, bring their own stuff, feel free to do so.
Now, what's great, it's indoors, it's January. If you're staying there, you're just going to be able to, you could attend everything in your bare feet.
You can, if you want to.
If you want.
I'm not gonna prohibit such behavior.
have you given any thought yet what it's going to sound like that weekend?
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, you can just hear, walking the streets of Eureka, just music coming out from the building in many different areas, and you know, these are some fun bands, and I know Mary will tell you a little bit more about the bands, but I'm privy to several of them. It's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of personalities. You know, it's really intended to bring a younger crowd to really enjoy Eureka Springs, and, you know, start the next generation of travel. You know, really focusing on indie folk and bluegrass, and and really just a lot of fun.
You mentioned the bands. There are some from Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Harrison, Joplin, Tulsa. You said Mary is kind of responsible for putting together the program?
She has definitely participated in that and did a lot of the research. We wanted to make sure that we got a band from each of the primary markets of Eureka Springs, and also folks that wouldn't be afraid to travel in January. So we're thinking we found a pretty good mix.
Well, can I talk to Mary for a second?
You sure can. Here she is.
Thank you.
This is Mary.
Hi, Mary. Your official title is Activities Director, and it sounds like there are going to be a lot of activities going on during January 24th, 25th, and the 26th.
Yes, sir, there is.
So when you're putting together, when you're helping put together a first-ever festival, what do you have to do?
Well, you have to book music. That's where we started. we wanted to get the lineup secured before we made the big announcement so everyone could be just as excited as we were. So
if people follow local music in North Central Arkansas and the Ozarks, there's some familiar names. Three Penny Acre is the headliner on Friday night. There's mm-hmm. Tyrannosaurus Rex out of Fort Smith. There's a lot of good area bands, aren't there?
Yes, sir. There sure is. We're really excited and really thankful that they're all going to come play for us.
Have you given thought yet to what it's going to sound like or look like inside for the weekend?
I have.
Yeah.
I have a big picture of what I would like. I know that we're hoping to possibly get some merchandise and T-shirts and maybe a merch room going, our hospitality room. And then, of course, the Ozark room will host the smaller bands, per se. And then the ballroom upstairs will host the bigger five-piece bands and such. And maybe even some vendors might come in and just really make the outdoor festival indoors.
All right. Mary, thank you. Can I talk to Jack one more time, please?
You sure can. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I know that there are so many kinds of competition for our eyes, our ears, our pocketbook. Is this kind of what you have to do in the future, is think a little bit differently and create a whole different kind of experience than what people are used to?
Well, I think if you're going to be successful in the future, you need to watch how people are buying, what they're seeking out, and you know, folk music or bluegrass. You know, that genre of music has found a younger crowd, whether it's now called indie folk or some of the bluegrass talent, whether it's Brian with Three Penny Acre, or it's trending right now. So what I think is definitely true is you have to pair what people are following and what's trending to what you're trying to sell. And what we felt like at the Basin Park is we needed to bundle several of the bands together to encourage people to come on a January event. And ultimately, we fill in gaps at the Basin Park and the Crescent. And what has happened here is we had a neat idea from Mary and from others, and said, you know what, there's probably several bands that are looking to play in that last week of January. Let's try to put something together. And you know, it's a pretty neat fit for Eureka Springs. Music, Eureka Springs, Basin Park Hotel, downtown. It all works pretty well, and that's what people are buying these days. So we just decided to put it all together and see if it'd work.
Well, best of luck on the inaugural Omomu. Oh, one more time.
Osmomu. Well, I have to work on that with you, Kyle.
Yes, yes.
You ready? Here we go.
Okay.
Osmomu.
Osmomu. Okay.
There you go. What do you think? You think it'll catch on?
Oh, I do. I do. Once
okay.
Once you figure out how to say it, I think it's infectious. Osmomu.
There you go. See, you have it already.
All right. Well, best of luck, and perhaps we'll talk again as we get closer to that last weekend in January.
Well, we'd love to share stories of the bands, and as we go a little further, inform your listeners.
All right. Jack Moyer, thank you.
It's going to be a great weekend in Eureka Springs.
Jack, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Kyle.
Jack Moyer and Mary House are with the Basin Park Hotel in Eureka Springs and are the developers of the first ever Ozark Mountain Music Festival taking place later this month at the Basin Park Hotel in downtown Eureka Springs. You can see a schedule of the bands at our website, ozarksatlarge.com. For more information about the festival, visit basinpark.com. And in about 3 minutes on Ozarks, we pay a visit to Poor Richard's Art in downtown Rogers.
Rogers was kind of dying out. So we wanted to do something that would bring some growth back if we could. And we had met a lot of artists and loved them, bought quite a bit of their art. And so we just decided to have an art co-op for the artists to sell their products in.
That story is just ahead on Ozarks at Large.
It is Tuesday, January 7th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. With me is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. I think this is the first time you and I have seen each other in 2014.
And time is flying already.
We're a week in. We're a week into the new year.
How many times? Well, nobody writes checks anymore.
That's
that used
right.
to be how you figured it
exactly.
out. It's 2014. It's what? Wait.
Yeah.
Yeah, I checked and caught all the date lines on something that said 2013, so I was happy.
So there was a bit of a respite. I mean, there were still things going on. It kind of slows down that week between Christmas and New Year's Eve, but I have a feeling we're full bore again.
Oh, yeah. It used to be all of January slowed down.
It doesn't anymore.
Among the things that's going on is that arts organizations are making their lists and checking them twice mm-hmm. of winter classes.
Oh, okay.
Ah, so yeah. We'll have a complete roundup in What's Up on Friday, but here are some to whet your appetite.
Okay.
The Community Creative Center is doing Super Saturday workshops. They're hands-on workshops exploring watercolor, pastel, clay, and more for kids 7 and older.
Okay.
And they start this Saturday at 10 o'clock, $25 per workshop. They're also doing a fairy tale forest embroidery class. Students learn the basics of hand stitching and embroidery and customized designs to create a unique fairy tale forest scene.
Oh, that sounds and it's a one.
No.
Okay, I was going to say
it's from 2 to 4 on Saturdays, February 1st through March 8th.
Okay,
$130 for adults, and Crystal Bridges has a studio studies series. I am not saying that three times fast. Starting with printmaking with Amber Paradin.
Oh.
Who I adore.
Yes.
And she's going to be teaching Lina Cuts from 6 to 8:30 on February 5th, 12th, 19th, 26th, March 5th, and March 12th.
Those are Saturdays?
I don't think so.
Okay. Those dates again?
Starting February 5th,
okay.
Weekly.
Gotcha.
And that's $200 for adults. And the Art Center of the Ozarks has a figure drawing class with Eve Smith, and they will work their way into stations with a live model.
Okay.
And that starts January 16th.
So,
and you can find out more Friday in What's Up.
All of these indoors.
Yes, and heated.
Yes, very good.
How lovely.
Yes, Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large.
University of Arkansas students will head back to class next week. And for those interested in the visual arts, a number of events planned for the near future. A new faculty exhibition featuring the work of Stephanie Pierce and Cynthia Norse Thompson will be on display in the Fine Arts Center Gallery from the 21st of January through February 23rd. A reception is scheduled for 5 p.m. January 30th. Pierce and Thompson will give the artist lectures January 30th and February 27th, respectively, both events scheduled for 5:30 in room 213 of the Fine Arts Building. Pierce's perceptually based paintings reveal passages of change as light and viewpoint shift over time, and the everyday resides in a state of flux. Thompson received her BFA in printmaking from the Maryland Institute College of Art and her MFA from Rutgers, sharing her own experiences as a young woman raised in the religious South. Her work addresses her own concerns with beauty, desire, vulnerability, and imperfection. In her newly produced body of work, she continues this investigation, yet the focus has become not only that of the aesthetic, but that of the process, technique, pattern, place, and content, and the historical made contemporary. More information about all of this available at art.uark.edu.
On the heels of the Champion Trees of Arkansas exhibition, which ended in December, John Brown University is preparing for another exhibit later this month. Cloth Journey will feature fiber arts work by artist Shirley Cunningham. The exhibit will be on display from January 21st through February 14th. For more, you can visit jbu.edu/art.
The exhibition titled Linking the Past to the Present is still on display at the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. The exhibit, which features works by Oklahoma artists Anita Fields and Tony Tiger, on display through January 25th. You can find out more about this exhibit online at waltonartcenter.org.
The Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale is showcasing the work of not one but two artists this month. Sharon Killian's Momentary Responses and Mia Bonauto's Fractured Painting for Absent Lovers are both on display through January 31st. An artist reception is scheduled for 6 to 8 Thursday evening. Visit artcenteroftheozarks.org for more information.
The visiting artist at the Fayetteville Underground this month is painter Jesse Ward. Simultaneously familiar and stark, Ward's images convey moments captured in time where even the subject isn't necessarily aware of the unsettling uniqueness of the moment. It will be Ward's final show as an artist residing in Arkansas. She's moving to Portland, Oregon, that is. The co-op's featured member artist this month is Nicole Howard. Her terracotta creations have taken many forms over the years, though all her work retains a distinct connection to her primary themes of gardening and renewal. January also marks the debut exhibition for a new underground member and abstract painter, Stephanie Pettit, using what she terms a synthetic colored palette. She creates imagery of varying focus with forms inhabiting abstracted landscapes. For more, you can go to FayettevilleUnderground.com.
If you're looking for an artist co-op in Benton County, you may be interested in Poor Richard's Art, which has been located in downtown Rogers for a number of years. Manager and owner Bill Shope says his wife and mother-in-law opened Poor Richard's in 2007 when it was located at 116 South 1st Street. Prior to that, the downtown business sold candy and other gift items. Shope says they turned it into an art gallery and had pretty good success with their venture.
We wanted to do something downtown that promoted Rogers and had a look of Rogers. I've lived here all my life. My mother-in-law's lived here all of her life, my wife. And Rogers was kind of dying out. So we wanted to do something that would bring some growth back if we could. And we had met a lot of artists and loved them, bought quite a bit of their art. And so we just decided to have an art co-op for the artists to sell their products in.
Shope's wife also owned a fabric store in the downtown area. And a few years ago, she told her husband she was going to close Poor Richard's so she could move her store into that space.
I said, okay. And I went home and got thinking about it. Couldn't sleep that night. Started actually crying because I had gained so many friends through Poor Richard's art. I was managing it down there for them. And I came up the next day and I told my mother-in-law and my wife I was going to open it in a different location, found this building, and it worked out fine for us.
As of this month, it's been 2 years since Poor Richard's Art opened at 101 West Walnut Street, just about a half block away from its original home. The co-op now features 45 artists who create a variety of items, including pastel paintings, stained glass art, pottery, and jewelry. Member artists pay a monthly fee to help cover expenses like advertising and rent. A number of artists help Shope run the gallery on a daily basis. He says while working is not required, it is recommended. That's because it affects the gallery's commission rate. Shope says the gallery takes a 25 to 45% commission off of art that's sold. The more hours an artist works, the lower the commission rate will be. Shope says having the artists in the gallery also makes the experience more personal for patrons who want to meet and talk with the people who make the art being sold in the gallery. The co-op features regional artists, with some living as far away as Fort Smith and Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Shope estimates he has a list of about 65 artists who want to be part of the co-op, and while he says it's tough, right now he has to tell people there's no more room. When a new artist does become part of the co-op, it involves consultation among a selection committee. The group is not one set of people, but rather it rotates based on the medium of the potential artist. For example, if a new oil painter is being considered, co-op members who are more familiar with that medium may be selected for the committee. While not an artist himself, Shope often helps the committee in its decision-making process.
My only job on the committee is to check out personalities. Just because somebody's a great artist and they have real good art doesn't mean it fit with our group. We have a real tight core of artists in here, and we don't want anybody that's going to mess that core up. So we might turn down great art just to make sure we don't have any friction in the store.
In addition to managing the store, Shope drives the school bus. Upon completing his routes in the morning, he opens the store around 9:30 each weekday before leaving around 2:30 to begin his afternoon routes. Last month, he completed his final morning shift and is now only driving in the afternoon. He says he's halfway retired now, but he wants to continue driving some because he enjoys being around the kids. Shope also says his absence in the afternoon gives artists an opportunity to make decisions without him. One co-op member who helps mind the store while Shope is out is Andrea Bratton.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fine.
Good.
How are you doing?
Good. Can I help you with anything?
Oh, I'm just looking at some of your jewelry,
okay.
So I'm looking at everything.
Okay, we have lots of it.
Bratton and her husband create trees made out of copper and aluminum wire that sit atop stone and wood bases. The couple owns and operates a landscaping business, which is typically slow in the winter. A few years ago, Bratton's husband saw pictures of wire trees online and decided to give them a try. As of next month, the Brattons have been displaying their work at Poor Richard's for 2 years. Bratton credits her husband with being the more artistic of the two of them, and while he has no formal art training, she says he's always had an artistic eye.
I think with the landscape business, it's business that we started and that we operate, and it has artistic qualities to it. You know, it's not lawn mowing or lawn maintenance, it's installing and planting and a lot of design. And so he has a good eye for things, and he's just really good with his hands. And then he used to paint cars, and he was very good at that. He was real good at the body work. I mean, you can, you know, getting it smooth, getting the body on the car straight, really good quality paint work. So I think that kind of all lends to and he just has a natural feel and talent for it.
Bratton says it's nice to be able to work with her husband on their art. She's also really grateful for the opportunity to sell their work at local galleries like Poor Richard's. In addition to benefiting artists, Poor Richard's owner and manager Bill Shope says the gallery is beneficial to the community.
Personally, I think a community is not going to grow unless you have art. And if you'll notice people traveling, especially with Crystal Bridges coming, people travel, they go to art, they're drawn to it, and nature, and the art and nature work together real close, they're just hand in hand, and we have all that in Rogers. The artists pretty well run the store. It doesn't require much from me. I just take care of their payroll checks and the bookkeeping and paying the bills, but they pretty well run everything in the store. So it's their store as far as I'm concerned. It's not mine. It belongs to the people of the community and the artists.
Poor Richard's Art is open from 9:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, and from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays. More information is available at poorrichardsart.com.
Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Waldron.
2014, so far so good?
So far so good. There's still plenty of time left for it to not be, but so far so good.
Yes, 359 days or something.
Yeah.
Yes. And do you know what day of the week it is? This was an odd last couple of weeks.
Let me think. I think it's Tuesday.
It is Tuesday.
I'm probably cheating by reading my script.
That's okay. Let's see. I'll be with Christina tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, and then you and Christina on Thursday.
That's right.
All right. And more possibly bad weather.
Winter tomorrow. Weather.
Winter weather.
Yeah.
Synonymous. Yeah. Winter and bad. All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks so much for listening. Another brand new show tomorrow at noon.
Have a happy Tuesday.